Good morning and welcome to Racing Pulse on this Monday, the 3rd of October. That's right, you heard it right. 3 hours of Racing Pulse each and every day. Looking forward to it. We've got some new segments, some new guests to speak to throughout the week. And we need all of 3 hours in this current period of the Spring Carnival because there is so much to discuss and dissect from the weekend. What about Tab Turnbull Stakes Day on Saturday? Three Group 1s in Sydney. We had the ARC weekend overseas. Very elegant performance there. We're going to be speaking to the major players this morning. Kira Maher, Dave Eustace just went in Group 1 races after Group 1 races every weekend. We'll kick off the program with Kieran today. We'll also have a chat to Hugh Bowman, who had a great day at the office. Of course, he deadheated in the Epsom and lost at running, threw down the gauntlet to Nature Strip as well with the upcoming Everest. And we'll also have a chat to the Kiwi, Andrew Forsman. What a day it was, winning both the lead up to the Derby in the Superimpose and also the Edward Manifold for the fillies heading to the Thousand Guineas and possibly the Oaks as well. A little later in the program, with the extended 3 hours, we will have David Gately's post-mortem, his look back on the weekend, looking forward to getting Gator's thoughts and the horses to follow. At 10 o'clock, we'll have Fast Form, which will be previewing today's meeting from the race caller's perspective and also the best bets perspective as well. The full form preview will move to 11 o'clock each and every day. And we've got a special king of the tipsters to kick us off on this Monday because Dean Lester will be looking at Pakenham today. And we'll also be previewing what will be a brand new program on RSN today because after my show at 11.30, it is the debut of the Big V. Matthew Nevitt and Sean Cosgrove will be here to look at all things at Victorian racing. They'll jump in the studio and give us a preview today. And we'll also get the latest with Mark Stevens on day one of the trade period. So it's a huge jam-packed 3 hours. Don't you go anywhere. And to join me for the first hour and a half, no, only an hour. No, it is an hour and a half. Matt Stewart and also Mick Sharkey. Gents, what a weekend. Now, first of all, Matty, winner or loser? Were you up or down?
No, Flemington was good. I sort of nailed a few of the more obvious ones, the Private Eyes and the Forsman Philly and so on. I didn't find the winner of the ARC, but I did enjoy watching the ARC overnight. And do you reckon a question for Kieran Maher might be, did you watch it and when are you going to win it?
Well, I'm not sure if he would have stayed up to watch. He would have watched a replay.
Kieran never sleeps.
One thing that you can never, ever bet against is a very wet track for the ARC, which is what we had overnight as well. We'll talk about the winner there, Sir Mark Prescott, winning his first major over in France. Mick Sharkey is here to join us as well. Sharknado.
Yes, yes.
It's an interesting weekend of racing because we were hoping that the picture for the Caulfield Cup, all other majors might have become a little clearer. For me, it's just become a bit more muddied again.
Yeah, it has. I think we expected some of the bigger names to stand up, some of the horses sort of up the top of the markets to really stand up and announce themselves. And instead, we had a six-year-old gelding by Ghibellines stand up and take favouritism for the race. Smoke and Romans. I don't think anybody really expected that, despite how well the horse is going. I think Group 1 level, I think most people thought that might be a ceiling for him, but lo and behold, Kieran Maher and David Eustace have pulled another stroke of magic.
And Ethan Brown. It was a beautiful ride.
Oh, yeah.
It was an upset win in the Tab Turnbull, which now has Smoke and Romans a $5 favourite for the $5 million Caulfield Cup.
They were followed by Maximal. Young Verda behind them needs a run. Do us and then Gold Trip. Further back, Profondo. Smoke and Romans, 250 metres to go. Takes the lead from Maximal. Young Verda, then Gold Trip. Smoke and Romans, 100 metres to go. Still in front and will win the Turnbull. Smoke and Romans from Maximal second. Young Verda third.
And well, it's been a remarkable and meteoric rise for Smoke and Romans. You go back through his form. It wasn't that long ago he was getting beaten in benchmark 70s at Bendigo. Of course, he improved to run second in the Bendigo Cup, win the Pakenham Cup. Things didn't go right in the Bagot. Now he's an outright favourite and a dominant favourite for the Caulfield Cup, and there's only one man that could get him there, and that is Kieran Maher, who has the Midas touch with these stayers, and he would have been a very happy man on Saturday. And he joins us this morning. Kieran, congratulations once again.
No, thank you very much. It was a great day Saturday, and he's just a horse that's in really good form, and looking forward to the cup now.
When he came back in this time, in your wildest dreams, did you think you'd have him as a $5 favourite for the Caulfield Cup and a Group 1 winner of the Turnbull?
Well, the plan always was to get him to the Melbourne Cup, and the horse showed very early on that he'd just come up very well. And, you know, I've touched on before in pre and post races about how quirky he was. And he sort of used to waste a lot of, he would sort of be a little bit stressy and sort of he struggled to hold weight because of that. But the end of last prep, we sent him down to the beach just so he'd get used to getting on and off trucks every day and just change it up for him. And normally I send them there just to a little bit of a refresher in the mind, but he actually dropped more weight. But I was keen to leave him there because I knew he had to grow up if he was going to go to the next level. And that has sort of shown this prep. He's a lot more relaxed and spends most of his time down at Fingal, just cantering up and down the sandhills, and comes into Cranbourne for a grass gallop. And you know, he's just a very happy horse, and is carrying a lot more weight and a lot more strength this prep, and that's carrying through to his form.
Could you have furnished him, Kieran? Could you have achieved this without all the tools in the toolbox that you've got? You've mentioned the course proper gallops at Cranbourne, the rolling hills of Fingal, the beach. Is he a product of what you've created behind the scenes, almost like so many of the others have been as well?
Yeah, definitely. Like, as I said, we couldn't really, in the early days, he used to live at Ballarat, and he sort of needed that relaxed country environment because he was so quirky. You know, to go to the next level, as I said, you know, he had to change, and we do have the facilities to do that. So, yeah, he definitely is a product of the whole system, and he's a banner, I suppose, he's a flag bearer.
Quirks aside, Kieran, what he is a winner. He's won 9 of 23, and when you look at the horses that he beat there on Saturday and some that were mentioned as being contenders for that race, Maximal, Young Verda, Gold Trip, they've only won one race each. You know, do you think when it comes to stepping a horse up seemingly out of its grade, if you've got a winner, like a horse that knows how to get the job done, does that make it easier?
Well, you know, when you've got a horse, well, definitely, you know, winners usually continue to win, and you know, he's a horse that makes his own luck. You know, early in the prep, because he wore shades last time around, everyone was sort of saying, oh, when are you going to put the shades on? And but he was just a horse that, you know, has grown up, and you know, he's just a genuine horse. You know, he makes his own luck, he goes forward, he takes the position, and yeah, as I said, the plan was always to get into the Cup through the Bart Cummings. But when he won the Foundation Cup, or the old Naturalism, that easy, and there was no penalty going to the Turnbull, it was a no-brainer.
Regardless of all that, is it still hard to get your head around Smoke and Romans being a $5 Caulfield Cup favourite? You've won a Caulfield Cup with a champion in Jamaica. It's a thin year for a myriad of reasons. The internationals aren't there for one. Is it still hard to imagine Smoke and Romans winning a Caulfield Cup, or is it easy for you to imagine Smoke and Romans winning a Caulfield Cup?
Well, it's easy now, given looking at his form. I suppose at the start of the prep, I never would have thought he'd be favourite for a race like that. But, you know, he hasn't even been to a mile and a half this prep yet, and, you know, arguably that's his best distance. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. The owners have been on quite a ride, and Don Frampton, he was keen to make sure our focus was the Melbourne Cup, and it still is. But I said to him when he won the Foundation Cup, we'll we have to deviate a little bit now and go to the Caulfield Cup. And, yeah, he was quite happy. But, yeah, he's just, you know, he's a horse that really got his tail up and yeah, can't wait for the Caulfield Cup now.
The lack of tempo probably helped Smoke and Romans in the Turnbull, but the lack of tempo probably hurt Interpretation in the Bart Cummings. Where to now for that horse, and has the team sort of gone through and looked at where he sits on the order for a Melbourne Cup and whether he can sneak into a field?
Yeah, I think he definitely can. He's a real dour stayer, you know. He's a proper two-miler, that horse. So the focus has not shifted at all for him. I said to Craig he needed to move into the race on his terms rather than when the race heats up. And when he went in behind the leader, that was sort of detrimental for his chances. He couldn't then move into the race on his terms. So I think the horse is going very well, and he'll now go to probably a Geelong Cup, most likely. And yeah, obviously he'll have to win to get in. I'd say he's probably just on the cusp. But, yeah, he's crying out for the 2 miles. So hopefully we can get him in that way.
What about Gold Trip, who went around in the Turnbull? Was the weighted horse on Saturday. Didn't really have any luck being stuck out three wide the whole way. But have you made a call on Caulfield Cup or Cox Plate after what you saw on Saturday?
I haven't yet. Yeah, Jamie said just no luck at all. She just apologised when she came back in. But she said he felt fantastic on top of the ground. Said that was no disadvantage at all, which was very pleasing to hear. And the way he's come through the race gives me a lot of confidence. You know, I just trotted him up there this morning and he's moving very well. So he can go either way. Obviously, he's got the weight in the Caulfield Cup. But as you said, it probably looks the easier race rather than the Cox Plate. But, yeah, he can go either way. I think the high pressure of the Caulfield Cup, of the Cox Plate, would really play into his hands as well. So we'll probably just have a look at the Caulfield Stakes this weekend and make a call. I don't really have to change his training that much. He's got a solid base on him. So, yeah, he's still each way, that horse.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because I think most of us think the bar's going to be raised considerably, or we hope it will be raised considerably with the Animos and Zarkies and whatnot. It's going to give us a measure of Gold Trip, but it's also going to give us a measure of the Turnbull in a way too, because I think it was probably a bit of a dip addition, but the bar's going to be raised, and it's going to be interesting to see how Gold Trip steps up to that level in the what's now the Might and Power.
Yeah, it will be. It will be. Like, the Underwood Stakes was a fantastic race. And, you know, they're the top quality horses, and like you said, the Might and Power is going to be a great race, and we'll really get a handle on where everything's going. But yeah, it's good to have options.
What do you do with Le Don de V? It was just touched off on Saturday.
Yeah, James, when he got off, he goes, oh, he just should have won. And he just got hampered a little bit at the top of the straight. And he's almost got this ungainly big action, and most horses would recover within a stride and probably take him for a four to get everything back in order. And, yeah, but he's going super, Le Don, and he'll definitely go to the Melbourne Cup. That could even be his next run. He doesn't like to race too often. And he's a horse in great form.
Now, how are you going to go about winning an arc? What's our plan? What, we've got three year little plan.
Our plan? What are you? You're tagging onto this trip, are you?
I want to latch onto this plan.
Somebody's got to cover it, I guess. This global plan.
Did you watch? I imagine you may not have had a chance to watch or watch the replay, but that would get your juices flowing. I would imagine the idea of a race like that, Kieran, and it'd be amazing. You're one of the few that could accomplish it from down here, and I know you got Hitotsu mounting some sort of a comeback in the autumn. Do you, at the corner of your eye, look at races like that and think, how do I go about it?
Yeah, definitely. Jamaica was a horse I was very keen to get to Europe and tackle a race like that. But unfortunately, she became ill and wasn't able to do that. So, yeah, it's always a race. Like, it's the world's best race, so you're always keeping an eye on it and just wondering what if when you're looking through the stable each week. It's that. It's the world's best race.
Hitotsu, could you think globally with Hitotsu? I know he's got to come back and there's a lot of water to go under the bridge, but he's the obvious one when you look amongst the flock. Is he a horse that you're already thinking international with?
Well, he's phenomenal as a three-year-old. He's got to come back and get back into that form. But if he did, he's certainly got that X factor.
Just looking ahead this week, Kieran, who will you run in the Guineas?
Lethal Thoughts, Sir Bailey. Sir Bailey's had two runs, both from wide draws. I think he needs to be on pace, so hopefully he can draw better, and that would improve his chances. And Lethal Thoughts, he ran on that track on that when we got the deluge sort of whilst the race was running, and sort of not a lot I could take out of that. So two horses there that are fitting well and will most likely take their place.
Could Lethal Thoughts be a sort of top seed Derby horse for you? He sort of had that look about him in the winter in Brisbane that he'd get a trip.
Yeah, it did. You know, his running the JJ was very good. First run that way going, and he was off the bit and wide off the track, and just kept closing all the way to the line. So I think he does have that sort of credentials. He's a quality horse, and could go that way.
And just one last one. Is Jamie Carr 100% locked in for Smoke and Romans in Caulfield Cup?
Yeah, I locked her in actually last week. She wanted to ride Gold Trip, and I said, well, if you ride that, well, I need a rider for the Caulfield Cup on Smokey at 51.5. And to which she accepted. So, She's obviously in great form, and there's not many riders that can ride that line.
That's a good effort. You usually have to. She's like booking Robbie Williams now. You've got to book her a year in advance. So well done getting it within a 2-week time frame.
I'm sure she was quite happy with it after Saturday as well.
Did you make the Melbourne Cup part of the deal?
Haven't yet. But I'm sure with hopefully a good run in the Caulfield Cup, she'll want to stay with.
Good on you, Kieran. Well done again on the weekend.
All right. Thank you very much.
He's just overriding everything. Like, it overrides what you think the quality of the horse is, what you think the quality of the competition is. Kieran Maher just overrides it all with this force of class. He just keeps doing it relentlessly, Shark.
He's a good horseman. And, you know, like Moody used to do, I guess, when, you know, pre his hiatus, his ban, he taught horses how to win, and he's doing it again. You can see it with Boogie Dancer. You know, he's built a winner towards 1,000 guineas, yeah. Peter Moody, and Kieran Maher being in that space, they've done a very similar thing with their stable.
And he's got about 20 Smoke and Romanses in the stable. Yeah. There's not just one. There's a lot of horses of this caliber, unless this one suddenly burst away.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Beaten Brigade in the Turnbull.
Placing their opinion on the line, it's The Verdict.
Great to have your company on the verdict. I'm going to read a few SMSs out because we're getting close to the 9 o'clock news. And then after that, we're going to dissect the beaten brigade in the Turnbull and see where these horses are in the spring carnival. Sharky, that Profondo needs the same gear change as Remark had. He's been a disappointment, Profondo, hasn't he? He got the good ground he wanted on Saturday. He looked to be in a decent spot and he just delivered nothing.
Yeah, it just hasn't. Hasn't gone on with that early three-year-old form, sadly. He looks incredible. I saw him in the yard. He looked fantastic. He's a very good-looking horse, but unfortunately, looks don't always translate to performance. And Craig Williams, if you read his post-race comments, it sort of tells the whole story. He was doing a lot in running to try and keep that horse's mind on the job and to get him to cooperate with what he wanted him to do as a jockey rather than just to charge and go keen.
Boys, I don't want to hear any claims Inspirational Girl was unlucky, drawing 11, but sitting buried on the fence 8 lengths off. She did struggle to get out, and I like the way she hit the line. I don't think it cost her the race, the way the race was run, but is she one horse out of that Turnbull Stakes race, Sharky, that you could see turning the tables on Smoke and Romans in a Caulfield Cup?
Well, she's bred to get a trip, and we haven't seen her out past 1800 until Saturday when she ran in the Turnbull, and she was chewing up the ground from a position where she couldn't really do much. I don't know what the text is suggesting. She was ridden to do no work in the run, and the way horses pushed on ahead of her, I thought that Jai McNeil was entitled to come across and sit on the rail. Probably expected a bit more tempo than there was, but she was still unlucky. Just because she was on the fence doesn't mean that she wasn't unlucky.
Gold Trip, do you forgive Gold Trip three wide, or did you expect more?
Well, he didn't run poorly.
With the weight.
He ran good race.
They're just not winning these horses.
He's now won one of, 15 now?
Yep.
So, and as we said to Kieran, there's a horse that's won 9 of 23, Smoke and Romans. Gold Trip, has he forgotten how to win?
Well, maybe, Maxwell, I'm going to ask you a few others, and I want your SMSs to keep coming through, 041 690 50 52. The best tweet or text of the morning will win a $100 voucher at the George. More to come on The Verdict after this.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. It's an extended edition of The Verdict, 3 hours today. Looking forward to getting Gator's post-mortem from the weekend a little later in the program. We'll have a full preview of today's synthetic meeting at Pakenham with Dean Lester at 11 o'clock today. And we'll have Fast Form just after 10 o'clock as well. And then at 11:30 today, the debut of a new program on RSN, The Big V with Matty Nevitt and Sean Cosgrove. Matty Stewart and Mick Sharkey here. We're talking about the Turnbull on Saturday, the beaten brigade. Boys, Maximal, he was a good run. You can't argue with that. He was in the right place. He was beautifully ridden by Ben Mellum. I thought he was going to explode at the top of the straight, but he kind of just ground to the line. Is he now looking for 2,400 metres and a genuine Caulfield Cup chance now, Sharkey?
I'm not sure he is an explosive horse. I think he needs a tempo.
The last thing we need is a horse exploding all over the track.
That's probably not the best thing. No. Yes, the other thing he probably needs is a win. He's in that same category as a few of them there.
I reckon he's
Profondo, Gold Trip. You know,
is he the one who
like 1 and 2 win horses?
Is he the one who improves rapidly out of the race? I've got a feeling he might be the only one of the few in the race that could actually really improve significantly into the Caulfield Cup, just with the way the prep's gone and the glimpses he's shown. If he gets a firmish track at Caulfield, I actually think Maximal. I know how astute John O'Shea is, and he's sort of vague about Benno. Maybe he's focusing a lot on Maximal for the Caulfield Cup.
I hope so, because I'm on 150s.
But, put it this way, if I was tipping for the Caulfield Cup now, I think I'd tip Maximal.
Oh, God, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
Well, I don't think I would be, but I think I am.
This says a lot about horses that have had a lot of media coverage, right, since they've come to Australia, a lot. Gold Trip and Maximal. Mm. You would think these things are rusted on superstars. They have both won one race
yep.
in their life. Is what I know, cue text messages about Sharky and Stewart bagging local horses, but we promote these things like they're megastars. They've won one race. One race.
I think there's a reason why we're talking them up as chances in the Caulfield Cup, because it's all about what else is around.
Well, so. And the headline act for the Caulfield Cup and the long-time favourite is Dewis. And again, it wasn't a terrible run on Saturday, but it wasn't the run of the Dewis that obliterated the field in the Australian Cup and won the Tancredi in Sydney as well. On the spring ticket on Saturday, we were live throughout the day. We had a chat to Ed Cummings after the race. This is his reaction on Dewis's run.
Yeah, look, first thoughts are that she was in the right place at the right time to making a pounce on the race. She looked like she was working to the line in a more sort of dour fashion, typical sort of staying type of fashion. I'm not discouraged at all by the effort. She's been beaten a small-ish margin, 2.5, 3 lengths off the top of my head in a race that was run very slowly, 2.5 seconds slower than the Australian Cup that she won. And she was further forward today than she ever has been. So I think she's a horse that appreciates 2,000 at a fast clip. I think she'll be ready to rumble going to a mile and a half in a couple of weeks' time. And at first glance, it seems like that's the sort of ground that she wants at the moment. She pulled up without having much of a blow. So she's done all the right things between her last start, where she did pull up blowing, and today. I think she's a fit horse now. I think she's ready to go fourth up and fifth up into some pretty nice staying races.
So we've spoken to Edward this morning. She's pulled up brilliantly, no issues, and is heading to the Caulfield Cup.
He's talking about her like she's a grinder, though. Like, what happened to the Jewess who was letting down and spanking Think It Over in an Australian Cup, and then going to the BMW, and then being one of the talked about Queen Elizabeth horses? It's almost like with the atrial fib, the other little issues. Maybe she's an autumn horse who likes to be prepared off the warmer months and then coming into the autumn. I don't know, but she's now being talked about as a downgraded sort of horse than the one that we were anticipating. Like, you know, cups, you know, grinding, you know, staying the trip and all that. That's not the sort of conversations we thought we were going to be having about Dewis. Just a quick one. Richo's texted, John O'Shea said on air on Saturday, Benno does run in the Might and Power, and he backs up into the Caulfield Cup like the backup he did into the AJC Derby. So okay. Benno, so John O'Shea might have two runners.
Well, they'd be mad not to go to the Caulfield Cup with Benno. And I know previously John O'Shea said he's not happy with the weight, but with the way the race is shaping up, and after missing the run the Metro, you can't do anything but go to the Caulfield Cup.
You know, on Dewis, I know she's probably... The jury's still out on her, which is not
I thought
a
she was
thing.
The next Ethereal. That's how big I thought she was.
But I didn't hate the run on Saturday. I didn't look at it as, oh, well, you're gone. I didn't hate it.
Smoke and Romans.
Given the tempo and where she was, like, she started to improve, and then Maximal wandered out in front of her, and she really had nowhere to accelerate. And Josh Palmer was sort of just riding her, but not riding her fully out, because he had nowhere to go. There was a wall of horses, sort of that half a length in front of her, if she built momentum.
I didn't hate it. I need to find a wild card. There is one.
Do you know who
something,
he is?
There has to be a wild card.
Do you know
card.
Who it is? Vaughan Declare.
Well, yes. He should have... I'm with you, Sharky.
Vaughan Declare is the wild card.
He was a huge run in the Bart Cummings, and he needed to finish top three in the Bart Cummings to re-qualify for the Melbourne Cup. Now... He can go to the Caulfield Cup and run top eight. I'm not too sure whether they were keen to go through a Caulfield Cup to the Melbourne Cup, but they don't have an option now.
Where
so he is the best horse at his best form in the race. The Melbourne Cup he won 2 years ago was a much better addition than we're going to see this year, and a much better addition of the Caulfield Cup, where he ran out of his skin at Caulfield. He may be a better horse at Flemington, but he's back to... Maybe not his best, but somewhere near it, which is probably going to be good enough for this year's Caulfield Cup.
Was it 2019 he won the Melbourne
Correct.
Cup? So 3 years ago, we're talking... This is how bleak the picture is for this Caulfield Cup, really, is that we're talking up a horse who hasn't won a race since winning a Melbourne Cup at big odds 3 years ago. So
Allegron's the second favourite. It was stretched from...
On the phone.
The Turnbull because of an elevated temperature. Gold Trip, we don't know if it's going to go to Caulfield. Inspirational Girl, Maximal, Montefilia, gosh, she was disappointing on Saturday. Yeah. I wouldn't want to be backing Montefilia in a Caulfield Cup.
The market was
chasing
against
home,
it too.
Cascading in the Hill Stakes on Saturday. And then you're out to the lights of, you know, what? It's only $18, but Knight's Order is a horse a little bit like Smoke and Romans, who is going to put itself on speed and be there at the end of a race. You don't think it's got the class to win it, but this year it may well do.
It might be a boom time type Caulfield Cup.
Well, it could well be. There's a few extra.
I'll be back in boom time.
Here we go. Boys, Vow and Declare, why aren't you talking about this horse for the Caulfield Cup? Should have almost won Saturday. I'm on at $67 and went again at $26. That's from the Prez. Well, the Prez, I'd like to have $67, Vow and Declare, in a Caulfield Cup. There's a few here that I want to get to as well. Lads, Goldtrip's been massive, running wide with no luck in his last two starts. He loomed to win both of them with a bit of luck and cover in the Caulfield Cup. I still feel he is the one to beat. What are your thoughts? That's from Dave. You're not a Goldtripman anymore.
With 57 kilos, so he climbs in the handicap. Yes, he gets to his best distance, arguably. But where's the killer punch? Where's that attack? He's very good at running good races, Goldtrip. Very good at that. Not so good at winning.
Yeah, there's. I don't know whether this is the best example of the bigger picture issue that Chris Roots just touched upon in his column in Sydney this morning, which was interesting coming from a Sydney journo about the too many races and too few horses, and that's just a very general way of describing the issue we've got with the pop-up races, and it more affects the Epsom and those races, which was down to a field of 10 after the scratchings, while there's all these higher, more expensive races that have been around for 5 minutes. And I'm not sure if it parlays all the way down to the Caulfield Cup with the very thin nature of it as well, but we're seeing a lot of very thin races at the moment.
Well, there's no internationals, and there's no defending champions of the last year. There's no incentivizers, no very elegant.
And three of the top seven horses in the market have won one race each.
Yep. But you do expect
three
the ranks.
The top seven in the market.
You do expect the ranks to replenish reasonably
quickly.
But
the Metrop was an average race as well.
But that's the thing. And,
it's the
and,
staying race.
And whether that was interesting what Chris Roots wrote about saying that there's a sentiment growing amongst Sydney trainers that maybe we now have an issue that's not satisfactory at all of too many new pop-up races and not enough respect for the traditional races. And that does parlay down to races like the Caulfield Cup by ripple effects.
There are so many options and so much money. I mean, the Hill Stakes is the example that $1 million Hill Stakes on Saturday, and Cascadian's gone there instead of going to an Epsom, because it was an easier race to win and the prize money's only $500,000 less.
And historically, there's no way in the world a Cascadian wouldn't have been running in the Epsom because there wasn't that other option. So there is a conversation that needs to be had, and I think it's now playing out the consequence of all these new pop-ups. What we're seeing now is the consequence, and that is the races that we barely have the depth of numbers to prop them up anyway. Now we are asked to prop them up whilst there's these new distractions. And I think that conversation that they are suggesting maybe about to happen in Sydney is probably
a
very good one.
James McDonald put it out there on RaceNet during the week.
Yep. So it's interesting that participants are the ones who are bringing up the issues. So it obviously has to lead to a fruitful conversation because we need to rein things in a bit now. I think we obviously need to rein things in. The industry's not big enough to accommodate all of these new things with the horse population we've got, and we're seeing it play out.
We don't have the depth.
Flemington on Saturday, every race was thin. The Gill guy was thin. This is all the Sydney, all the big money in Sydney. The Bar Cummings was very thin. The Turnbull was thin. Everything's thin. The Sydney races are thin. So we need a conversation about reining it in just so we can better highlight our better horses at a time of year when we're supposed to be showcasing. So everything's just too diluted.
And there are a number of factors, aren't there? Like, we lose a lot of horses to Hong Kong.
Yeah,
We split the horses through the carnivals. So we've been talking about this for a couple of years, and the problem is,
but this is now it's playing out. Now it's playing out before our eyes. That's the issue. So,
and last year we didn't think we had a great crop of 2-year-olds that have come through. We haven't really seen. Sadly, we probably lost the biggest star of what was going to be for the Spring Carnival with the three-year-old Arf Cabin, the X Factor, who bled and is out for the rest of the spring. The three-year-olds are the ones that we get a bit excited about. What's coming through the ranks and where are they going? And speaking of, no one would have been more excited than Andrew Forsman on Saturday after what his three-year-olds did.
She's lickety-split from Do It La and Taj Need back to the inside from Typhoon Titmus at the 100. She's lickety-split, draws away. She's lickety-split, is going to Do It and scored three-quarters. Typhoon Titmus, Taj Need, Do It La. And kicked away, Mr. Maestro. Two lengths, three lengths, Berardino, Red Sun Sensation, and then Arzino, but it's all Mr. Maestro. This is going to absolutely trot in. How easy. Mr. Maestro won it really well. Second in the race.
That's what you call a very good day at the office for Andrew Forsman, who now has the favourites in the 1,000 Guineas. I think she's close to favourite in the Oaks. She's Lickety Sprit, and also the favourite in the Derby in Mr. Maestro. Andrew, well done.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for having me on.
When you put these horses on the plane to bring them over here, were you thinking I could win a 1,000 Guineas, an Oaks, and a Derby?
Well, that's always your aim, isn't it? I guess you sort of target those better races and work your way through and hope you're somewhere near the mark.
And the pedigrees on these horses, Andrew, that's something that, I don't know, just the Murray Baker connection, Turn Me Loose, Let Me Roar, that was another one that went through the stable, wasn't it? You know, there's that bit of familiarity with both these horses that you'd have a pretty good handle on the sort of quality and the sort of ability they may possess before bringing them over.
Yeah, I guess it does help knowing the families, and you see similarities in both these horses to their size and in Mr. Maestro's case, particularly his mother.
Andrew, it dips and wanes a bit, but, you know, obviously Sir Tristram Zabil, and we lost the two big Waikato stallions as well, but there seems to be a terrific resurgence in the stallion ranks, in the staying stallion ranks in New Zealand, and it obviously has always played out through Baker Forsman, that's a sort of a mine that you're tapping into again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think you look at the results for New Zealand breeds right across Australia on Saturday. It was great winning the Metropolitan in Sydney, and they had a great day in Melbourne as well. So, no, our breed is probably the one thing that's kept our industry so relevant for so long, and I think the ability to raise good quality young stock just on the grass over here, and it's just a good place to produce horses.
It's like the Aussies have sort of always been fond of the Kiwis, but the flirtation with European horses has probably been a distraction for the last 10 or so years, but soundness issues and the like and expense, we seem to be coming back to our old girlfriend over there in Kiwi, don't we? I've always been here. I've always been producing the results. Do you think that's going to be a big help for the Kiwi breeding industry as well in the next sort of 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. The Europeans, that sort of market's priced itself out a little bit now, perhaps. And obviously with age group horses, it's hard to bring out a Northern Hemisphere bred age group horse to compete in derbies and whatnot. So that certainly gives us a big advantage.
Gee, they were both impressive on Saturday. They were dominant. I love the way she's lickety-split. You had the blinkers on. She raced pretty strongly, but she was, when she sprinted, she put a little gap on them as well. How did she come through that run? Do you think there's more improvement?
Yeah, I think there is. She's actually come through very, very well. Touch wood. She needed to, because there's only a 10-day backup into the Guineas. So everything's gone to plan at this stage, and you just like the way she travelled a lot better. Damien gave her a bit of a dig to hold a spot early, and she did get quite keen. And they were going pretty steady, and then she came back to him nicely and just sort of still wandered a touch when she hit the front in the straight, but kept up a strong gallop.
Andrew, is it easier pitching staying three-year-olds, boys and girls, into the spring Derby and Oaks, or the autumn one in Sydney? What tends to happen with the New Zealand Raiders in Sydney is that they win the Rosehill Guineas or the Randwick Guineas, and then maybe after the summer in New Zealand, it becomes a bridge too far in the absolute grand finals. But it seems to, the record in Melbourne in spring seems to be every bit as good as Sydney in the autumn with the staying 3 year olds.
Yeah, I think the program in Melbourne in particular, 3 year olds, is brilliant. There's so many options right through from maiden. In maiden grade, even you can run against your own age group at a mile as a maiden. In New Zealand, we just don't have those races. They're sort of 12, 1400 metre events, often on wet tracks at this time of the year. So for Mr. Maestro to be able to get over just off the back of a soft trial, have a couple of runs to get him going, and now he's really starting to hit his straps.
Any others? I know these are the two headline ones at the moment. Well, what sort of squad are we looking at across the range of distances in the next, say, 6 or 7 weeks from your stable?
St. Bathurst was very good yesterday in the Seymour Cup.
Yep,
I thought he came from last, only beaten a length. Really happy with him, and that's probably sort of his level for now. He's a very talented horse, but he's still lightly raced and still learning his craft. So no, hopefully he's got another good run or two in him soon, considering running him at Caulfield Saturday week. And Aegon, he'll at this stage potentially head over next Wednesday as well and perhaps run in the Munga Stakes there.
Gee, with Mr. Maestro, we know his dad Savabeel was a good stayer as well, but he looks so strong, and it was just a soft win on the end. Is it the 2,500 metres you're really confident that he'll be that strong at the end of that?
It's always hard to know. I've seen very good horses tripped up in the Derby. I know we brought Dundeal down, and obviously he was brilliant. He was a super horse, probably the best I've had anything to do with, and he couldn't get the job done that day as a short price favourite in the Derby. So it is a tricky race. It can bring them undone a bit. So you don't go into it, you know, taking things for granted.
Uncle Murray still earwigging you in the background, or has he gone fishing? What's the story with Murray?
No, he's been quiet. I think he's just enjoying, you know, just not doing much at all, really. He's just chilling out. I haven't really seen much of him. So I think he's just probably getting used to life of not being around the stable, and I'm sure they'll do some travelling at some point soon too.
Are you staying at the Frankston Motor Inn?
Oh, sure.
The Footscray Motor Inn?
Sure, he's got better taste.
No, the halfway house, as we knew it as.
You've upgraded. So you should. Hey, just a quick SMS. Would you head on to the Oaks with She's Liggety Split after the 1,000 guineas?
Hard to know. Really, it's something we haven't really even thought about. The target was the guineas. Right from when we got over there, and obviously the Oaks is an option. But she can run in the Mayor's Mile as well on Derby Day, and she'd only carry 49 kilos in that. So all just great to have those options available, really.
And what about your man, Damien Lane, who rode brilliantly on Saturday, had a double, and then backed up by running in the Melbourne Marathon yesterday and ran a time of 3:23.10. You didn't go along for a jog, did you, as well?
No, I got out yesterday morning. I left him do that, but he said he's pulled up a bit sore. But that was great to see him do that. But it was his first marathon anyway, so he's been a huge help to me. It's great when I can't be there all the time to have him handy to help ride track work, and he gives great feedback and certainly big assist than what I'm doing over there.
Well done on the weekend, Andrew. Great performance.
Thanks very much.
It's amazing from Damien Lane, like to compete, yeah. You know, to do all the work that the jockeys do and ride, and you'd look for any opportunity to put your feet up, wouldn't you? And he comes out and runs a marathon.
But this is how fit they are.
Well, the perception of, you don't think about jockeys as elite athletes when they are. And there are so many that are unbelievably fit and huge runners.
Well, Patrick Maloney lives a few doors up from me, and I run regularly. He runs in basically a jacket, a beanie, tracksuit pants, and he is hooning around the streets. Like, yeah, he's having a sweat and everything else, but it would be so uncomfortable in the clobber that he gets around in and runs in. And he's running time, as they say. So fit. Well, these men and women, so fit.
Shout out to Kate Gath in the harness world, who's forever in a sulky, and when she's not, she's running. She's basically running marathons. So, yeah, quite incredible what these athletes do on top of their athletic careers as jockeys and trainers and drivers.
Sharky, do you have She's Liggety Split as the one to beat now in the 1,000 guineas, or are you in the other form camp of the Boogie Dancer form?
No, I think I do have She's Liggety Split on top. Yeah, I love that there was improvement from that first up run, which was really tough, and some wanted to sort of wait and see with her, given the conditions and how tough she did do it. She improved, she accelerated, she travelled really well. Hearing her trainer say then that there is more to come, I think that augurs really well for that next challenge for her. I think Waltz on By will be a much better horse stepping to a mile, maybe just if afforded that little bit of cover.
She needs it dry.
Rather than being flushed out a mile out from home, she needs it dry. She's literally split. What we do know is wet or dry,
yep,
she'll run well. Boogie Dancer,
speed,
wet or dry, she'll run well.
Yep.
So I think they are now, that they're drawing well ahead of the rest of the pack.
And it doesn't look like we're going to have the Sydney filly Invasion Fireburn, who was a bit disappointing, I thought, in the flight stakes on Saturday, won't be continuing on. And we double-checked with Anthony Cummings this morning as well. She's Extreme is going, yeah, to go to the Spring Champion, not the Thousand Guineas.
There was a horse in that manifold that I was keen to see on Saturday going to a mile, and I think that little balance-up mid-race, that stop-start aspect of it probably brought her unstuck. But a filly, without doubt, to follow to 2,000 metres and towards an Oaks is as time goes by.
Yep.
She's Extreme's really another nice example run of what we were just talking about before. The Spring Champion Stakes is now worth $500 million or something. Traditionally, She's Extreme. She comes down. She's a top Sydney filly in the Thousand Guineas. Now she's running in this race in Sydney.
Well, so there's another horse as well, Sharp and Smart, who ran so well over the Queensland Carnival. Graham Rogerson has come out and said that it's heading to Sydney. I think Ben Mellum's going to ride it in the gloaming and then aim up at the Spring Champion. So no Caulfield Guineas, if it comes through the Spring Champion, well, could be headed on to the Derby.
Yeah, the Derby would still have, yep, to be high on the agenda there. Roggie loves a classic, and that he is an absolute rusted-on Derby sort of horse, I would have thought.
Where do you have Mr. Maestro in the Derby?
Well, he's got to be...
He's outright favourite now in the markets.
Well, of course, yeah, of course he is, but everything that wins Saturday is favourite for insert Group 1 race here on the Monday.
Oh, so, I wouldn't give up on Art Zeno. I thought his run was still really good. And Marie McEwen told us on Spring Ticket on Saturday that he got really fizzy. And in the mounting yard, he sweated up really badly, got held up. I thought still hit the line reasonably well.
Yeah, look, they're all going to be in contention. I think Virtuous Circle's the Derby winner.
What price?
There's about 12 of them at $15. So, you know, he's in that group.
Be interesting if Dan O'Sullivan gets through the Guineas with Berkeley Square and then continues on. Like, Mark Zara's words are still ringing in my ears about Berkeley Square being the best three-year-old. And
yeah,
he's the one who's got the big bounding stride. And can he stretch out to 2,500 metres? That might give us a classy horse in the Derby this year. So
it's going to be a painful day Saturday if Berkeley Square wins the Caulfield Guineas after you and I have questioned his bona fides for the race the whole way along.
Well,
and he comes out and wins by three, and people have been saying he's the best three-year-old, et cetera, et cetera. And well, you and I have just been kicking his tyres a bit.
Well, not really. It's more about, you know, but we've been kicking tyres thinking that the aft cabins of the world would still be there. And I mean, I'm telling Shieldsy, our learned friend, that his horse Bankmore be better off running in a vase and a Derby. But then, you know, these are all horses that it's all about what you're up against, isn't it? And, you know, who's to say that Bankmore might not be one of those ones who comes along? I think it's going to be a spring. We saw it in the Derby. We've seen it in the Derby before when a Polanski comes along out of nowhere, and even a Guineas. It might be races that we look at retrospectively rather than looking ahead, because the races might look better in 6 months' time than they do heading into them.
Now, speaking of your friends, Terry Henderson and OTI and Derbies have a really nice chance in the Derby that's just been a little bit under the radar, I feel. Not many people I've heard anyway have mentioned this horse, Copelson.
I see it's a $15 chance. I'm actually not overly aware of its work, Copelson.
It is a very talented horse.
Is that the So You Think?
It's Rip Van Winkle.
Rip Van Winkle. Is it the half to Tiako Sharp?
That's the Tiako Sharp.
Not 100% sure. I've had a few conversations about, now I know which one you're referring to.
What are they doing with it?
Heading to the Derby?
I don't know.
That might be the question.
It ran up really well a week or so ago behind that White Marlin, the import of the Waterhouse team at Rose Hill. It was a very, very good run in that race.
Okay. Hey, rapid fire, boys, because time's getting away from us, and we've got to have a chat to Hugh Bowman. We want to talk about the Arc. Giga Kick, is it going to the Coolmore? Great training performance, Clayton Douglas. Or, Matty, you were pretty big on Saturday that there are some sharks circling for an Everest slot. What's the latest?
I imagine we'll find out in the next day or so, re-Giga Kick in the Everest. There was some jungle drum about that, and I'm sure we will learn more in the next day or so once the dust settles. So let's wait and see what happens on the Giga Kick front.
Which way would you go, Sharky?
His plan's been pretty good to date. Clayton with Giga Kick probably roll onto the Coolmore. But it's a shame they'll go there and Duel will beat him.
Oh, you're a big Duelman.
Oh, that was a very good run Saturday.
But he's a classic example, Giga Kick, of, to me, why would you run in the Everest? Why wouldn't you just hold your line and stay here and run in a Coolmore?
Well, I don't think he can beat the top five or six in the market in the Everest. The hard, foolproof sprinters, and then it gets down to that reduced amount of prize money where you probably win more winning a Coolmore than running six in an Everest.
And I think for the, you know, the interest in the spring with the good horses, I think one thing that people would be anticipating would be, and I certainly know the Buenos Nochos people are, is having another crack at Giga Kick up the same course in a few weeks' time in the Coolmore. So for the sake of the Coolmore itself, I think we need Giga Kick and Buenos Nochos to rekindle their little rivalry in that race.
Can Luna Flair be a top five contender in a Melbourne Cup?
Well, I wouldn't have thought Smoke and Romans would be favourite for a Caulfield Cup, so yeah, why not? Luna Flair can run really well in a Melbourne Cup. She's got a good turn of foot, and that can get her out of a lot of trouble, as we've seen a few times now in her career. She'll run top 10, I would have thought. Yeah, absolutely.
And Francesco Guardi should have won, even though it almost fell. Van de Clare got held up as well, so good luck to Luna Flair. She deserves her spot, but again, these are these races where you're going, gosh, if the internationals come out here in any decent form, I
Deauville Legend,
seen a local that is going to put up a fight at this stage.
If Deauville Legend turns up at his true level of form, if he travels and works well, he'll carve them up.
He should, shouldn't he? Loft's been heavily backed since James McDonald has been announced.
Different conversation.
Different gravy?
Oh, yeah. Deauville Legend, I think so. It's the real deal.
King of the Castle ran all right in that race from last and ran on okay to be beaten.
Serpentine ran well.
Yeah, I still think Eric Musgrave's going to get a phone call with a few of these.
No,
but
I'm surprised that
they need to get going.
Serpentine didn't go as
they need to go a bit
hard
stronger.
As what we were expecting.
Yeah. He's going all right, Serpentine.
And the other big performance of the day, just in a different league, and was backed as if unbeatable, was Private Eye.
Yes. Didn't it just smack them? That when he let down, that acceleration was just plain rude.
Yeah, it was a pretty watch if you took the $11 early in the morning when Ron Duffercy was tipping everyone on RSN into Private Eye.
Well, do they go the sprint or do they go the mile now, given his position like that?
There's talk about an Everest slot. I wouldn't have an Everest slot because he doesn't like the wet. I'd keep to Flemington where he could win a champion's mile or a champion's sprint off the back of that if Nature Strip doesn't go there.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. He's another one who should be hanging around in Melbourne, I think.
We need to take a quick break. It is 27 minutes to 10 o'clock. You're listening to The Verdict. On the other side of this, we'll catch up with Hugh Bowman.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
And quickly, Lost and Running moved up to take the lead. Marzu's fighting on together with Apache Chase. Back on the inside, Masked Crusaders flying late. It's Lost and Running from Marzu. Lost and Running, Marzu, Lost and Running. Lost and Running's won the premier. It's Top Ranked and Hinge going to the front. Top Ranked, Hinge. Ellsberg's fighting on the inside, coming home hard. Top Ranked in front from Ellsberg. Top Ranked, Ellsberg bobbed. Oh, close one in the Epsom. Ellsberg's really bobbed there on the inside. I made it very
well. It was a close one, and about 3 hours later, they officially declared it was a dead heat in the Epsom. What a day for Hugh Bowman, winning on Lost and Running. He shared the Epsom, and then Remark was absolutely stunning in the last as well. And one of our listeners is pretty happy. Good morning, gents. I took 50-1 a few weeks back, Top Ranked in the Cox Plate. Ring a ding ding. I'm licking my chops after the Epsom, giving 6 kilos and just second up. I think he's a better chance than Zaki. Can Matty Stewart speak to his mate Nish and find out? Is Top Ranked definitely going to the Cox Plate?
Oh, gee, I would imagine so. It's a Cox Plate you have to run in this year, so, and it's going to be an amazing story if the Niche can saddle up three runners. This is 2 years ago she was riding in Mongol Derbies, and now she's got three runners and a Cox Plate. So, and it was great for Hugh Bowman too, because he was the world's best jockey 4 or 5 years ago officially, and then the emergence of J-Mac and Jamie Carr and so on. So it's been more and more difficult for Hugh to hang on to that status, but I think he reminded everyone on Saturday he's had a roller coaster couple of years in some ways, but that was Hugh Bowman. That was the great Hugh Bowman on Saturday, wasn't it? I wonder if he thought Abdullah had nosed him out.
Well, shall we ask him?
Yeah, we better ask him.
Well, he's on the line. Hugh, congratulations, mate. Well done on the weekend.
Good morning, guys. Thank you. Yeah, no, it was a great day. Some really nice horses on display there, and
yeah, I had a good book of rides, and it's nice when it comes out the way it did.
Did you think Avdullah had just, well, more Ellsberg, of course, had just nosed you out, or were you confident that you were right in the mix?
Well, I knew I was in the mix, but I did think I'd been nutted. I thought he was just top ranked and tied on his run. When I strode past Karen on Hinge at the sort of 150 metre mark, I was supremely confident. But we had a heavy track, and top rank was second up, and he did have the top weight, albeit I still thought he was pretty well in at the weights. It just took its toll over the final stages, which you can see, and Ellsworth was coming in with fuller running, so I thought he beat me.
Could you see Ellsberg back inside? You had Hinged in between you. Was it one of those, close finishes? Usually the horses are close together, but you had Old Mate in between you there, just probably hiding Ellsberg's charge a little.
I could see, and he could see me. Brenton thought he won. I thought he won. Interestingly enough, though, a few years ago, I was on Streamer, and Bobin came in with a wide run. He was about 10 or 12 metres away from me, and even gave a little fist pump after the post. And as I was pulling up, I started to think to myself, gee, this might be closer than I thought. And it ultimately, Bovin beat me at a nose. So it was, I've been in some close finishes in the Epsom. It was satisfying to dead heat. Usually you don't really think like that, but it was a really satisfying moment for me.
Oh, you did a little fist pump in the one you mentioned. It wasn't a Greg Hall Doremus scenario. I don't think it's been widely reported that you early crowed before the photo came up there, Huey.
Well, hot off the press now.
Hey, does he feel like a Cox Plate horse this year with the improvement that he's got?
Yes, he does. He does. He's a serious individual. Really strong boy. Really good mover, really good attitude. He ticks all the boxes. He really does. And interestingly, though, you will notice if you look through his form, he's never raced beyond the mile. Mm. So that is a little, I think that has to come into calculations as a slight question mark, although he does give you the indication he'll beat up 2,000 metres.
Good year to find out. We've got Animo and Zaki's. We know his level. He's not a scary horse, Saki. He's a good horse. Is this the year to try and find out with Top Ranked?
Well, I think it's an extremely open race. I think Animo holds court, and deservedly so, as favourite. But, I think he too, with a race of such even quality, it could be... it mightn't just be a straightforward race. It might be a really tactical event, which not saying that everyone's going to go out there and deliberately try and rattle Animo's cage, but, I think given the way the setup's going to be, look, it could pay into his favour, and he just gets in a really sweet spot and it all goes to plan and he's too good. But, I don't think it's going to be that easy for him, or anyone else for that matter.
Yeah, no, it's an unusual year. I'll tell you what was an unusual sight was Annabelle Neesham out on the track to greet you and Top Ranked. Obviously, mm-hmm. there were some concerns last preparation after a run, and they were justified. There was an issue. Was there any reason that Annabelle may have thought there was a need to get out to Top Ranked, or was it just her way? She just wanted to be the first to have a chat to you and get a run through.
Well, I think she's pretty excited, Matt. It was pretty apparent she was about to win an Epsom. I thought, in fairness to the judge and the officials, I think with modern technology the way it is, if you can't find a margin within a minute or two, you're not going to find one. And that seemed to be the case, I guess, with Top Ranked Grey Nose. Created a little bit of a grey area right on the line.
It was bizarre how long. What were you all talking about while you were waiting for? Because I think it was 5 or 6 minutes.
Did you have a side bet with Avdullah after about the fifth minute?
Well, I thought from
I went from thinking I was beaten to, geez, it must be pretty close to, well, it has to be a dead heat. That was my way of thinking. I think Brenton went from thinking he'd won to, geez, this just must be close. I won't be able to cope if I lose. And ultimately, we all came up in front. But Annabelle was there, as was Sterling. It was his first Group 1 winner. Obviously, Gerald's trained many. But still, yeah, it was just a really unique moment. And what I will say is, looking back up to the crowd, you know, the anticipation from the people at the races, standing there in almost silence, waiting for that result to be shown, was a little bit eerie, actually, but it was a really cool moment.
Yeah, it was eerie to watch on TV. Hey, a year ago, no one would have thought that there was invincibility attached to Nature Strip, but he's almost become invincible unless you feel that Lost and Running, maybe we can get on slightly better ground. He's such a good horse, Lost and Running, and knocked off Marzu and Mars Crusader, who are good benchmarks. Is Nature Strip now feeling invincible in the Everest, or is there still that little chink in his armour where you think a horse like Lost and Running can make it interesting?
It's going to come down to the way the race is run, I think. You know, I don't think Nature Strip's unbeatable. I did after Ascot. And, you know, I have a healthy respect for the horse. He is the benchmark. And if he gets any sort of rhythm or peace, you know, he's going to be hard to run down. And he's beatable. I think that was shown first up. Although he won, it was close. And, you know, I Lost and Running's going to go better than he went first up. And I would imagine Nature Strip will too. But, you know, we know what Nature Strip is capable of. He can't go any better than what we've already seen. But Lost and Running can.
It's going to be a cracking Everest. Those top four or five that are chasing Nature Strip, because they're all very good horses in their own rights that we know about. Hugh, just as we let you go, have you spoken to Annabelle? Is it definite that they're coming, or is it most likely? Are you locked in for a Cox Plate ride?
It's been on the cards the entire prep. So given the way he raced on Saturday, I would imagine that they will continue towards that path, but it's not for me to decide. But yeah, certainly, put it this way, if you're on him, I'd be excited.
And you'll be with him?
Well, I don't know. I have a few options. Malunga, of course, who will soon race next week. Benno, John O'Shea's horse, who will run this week in the Caulfield Stakes, I understand, so they'll both run there. And El Bogdan, import that Chris Wallace brought over from James Ferguson. So, look, there's four really, and we know in such an open race, I'd like to at least sit on El Bogdan, of course, and see the Caulfield Stakes run next week, and we'll work it out from there.
Just one last one on Animo, and you've already half answered it with thinking it's an open Cox Plate. We've got the one of the world's highest rated horses in Nature Strip, and we've got very thin ranks everywhere other than Animo. But your sense with Animo, even though he's probably the horse to beat in everything, that he's not unbeatable either?
Oh, absolutely not. I think he's had a sweet preparation. Everything's gone well for him, presuming he goes to the Cox Plate. I mean, has that decision been made? Maybe you need to ask James Cummings. He has other options too.
There's a flicker of a conversation about the Champions Mile at Flemington.
Okay, well
every time we've spoken,
get off the phone to me and get on the phone.
We want to keep talking to you, though. We don't get you that often.
But look, he's not winked. He's not unbeatable. I mean, but he is the benchmark, and he looks unreal. He's a picture of health. I mean, if I had the option to ride him in the Cox Plate, then I'd take him. So, you know, I don't. But well, he's far from unbeatable. There's no doubt about that.
Q, we look forward to seeing you down here on Cox Plate Day on whoever you're going to be riding. And hopefully, have you got a cup riders yet? Is there any irons in the fire?
I don't have a cup ride. So if I don't get one, and with limited opportunities with the weights, it
would seem unlikely at this stage, then I will ride in Sydney.
Okay. Well, we'll see you Cox Plate Day. Good on you, Hugh. Well done.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, Ganel. Bodegon might only need a real good gallop for Hugh to go that way, because it's just, it feels like he's happy that he's won on Top Ranked, but he's not glued to him. And I would think that everyone's looking at our Bodegon now because
it's the X factor, isn't it? Because we know the form inside out here. The Might and Power on Saturday is going to be fascinating, because it'll solidify whether Animo is the number one seed, and clearly so, because it's the exact group that he'll meet in a Cox Plate, and it'll also determine whether On Thunderstruck even makes it to a Cox Plate. And I suppose we need to see how strong, once again, Alligator Blood is stepping out to the 2000.
Imagine a bizarre scenario where On Thunderstruck and Animo skip the Cox Plate and run into the Champions.
Where are you hearing that? I have not heard that.
No.
Who said
James
that?
Cummings, there was a very... a vague comment a week or so ago about how he's very interested in Champions Day at Flemington with a big squad of horses. And
yeah, but you wouldn't bypass a Cox Plate to go there.
Well, you can't run in, I would imagine you can't run in both. And I know what you're saying, of course. He was last year's Cox Plate runner-up.
Why can't you run in both?
Well, I just don't think after the grand final of the Cox Plate that you'd go again.
It's the last season that you'll see him.
Well, we'll see. I mean,
can we have a bottle of red on it? Animo will run in a Cox Plate.
Hugh Bowman is the one who put the cat amongst the pigeons there, not me, Michael, if you recall the conversation we had with him. So
I think he will be at the Cox Plate, providing he runs well on Saturday. That is Animo. We need to take a quick break. On the other side of this, we want to talk about the Ark.
Placing their opinion on the line, it's The Verdict.
Kiprios them and Ryan Moore are well clear. He's just idling and running towards the grandstand side here. He's giving away lots of ground. He's got so much of a lead. It's not going to make the slightest bit of difference. A little bit of a scare late on, but Kiprios has come to say hello to the crowd.
Alpinista in front. Verdeni, the green colours. Torpedo Tasso, the yellow. They're closing on her, but she's gutsy. She's brave. She's done it. Alpinista's won it. To Verdeni, Torpedo Tasso behind these Alpinistas.
They were the highlights from the Ark Carnival over the weekend, and what two phenomenal performances they were. Kiprios winning the Group 1 over there. The Stayers race by 20 lengths, and as you heard in the call, almost ended up in the crowd the last 100 metres, without doubt the best stayer in the world. And then Alpinista, who's, I think that's sixth Group 1 win
in a row.
Yeah,
eighth win in a row.
Trained by Sir Mark Prescott, ridden by Luke Morris, and for Sir Mark Prescott, the biggest win, because he doesn't travel horses very much, he hasn't won an English Classic, so for him to win the Ark in teaming rain earlier in the day and traditional heavy track conditions was a big performance. Overall, Sharky, your thoughts on the Ark this year?
Best horses finished in the top sort of two and three. Last year's winner, Torquedor Tasso, finishing third, I thought was the right two at the head of the market, ran 1-2, and it was a really good performance by Verdini, who, as we were speaking about El Bogodon before, El Bogodon was second to Verdini earlier this year in France in a Group 1.
That might be all it needs for Moonee Valley. Luxembourg pulled muscle, the favourite. A lot of criticism over there too, because as much as there was a little bit of rain on the day, it actually hadn't rained for three. It rained earlier in the week, and the track was absolutely bottomless at Longchamp, and the Japanese are now going to have to think, why do we keep trying?
So desperate to win that race, and gang tackled it again this year, and they just don't go in that ground.
What about, we'll talk about the Simeon incident in a moment, but Very Elegant the night before. It's just the same old story. Like, she's not, I don't think, racing anywhere near her best that we've seen here, but she just had no luck. It was a long way for Mark Zara to go to get bottled up on the inside, back on the fence, in an absolute walk, jog and canter. Sharky, what did they do with Very Elegant?
Well, I think there's 2 weeks to the race at Ascot. I think they probably go there, don't they? What?
Well, you've come so far. Do you want to have a crack where you're going to race with some speed?
You know, they're running in sit sprint races that don't suit her. And a mate said to me on the weekend, but she ran in sit sprints here and she was able to win. But it's a different scenario over there. You know, they're not second-hand horses that are going around in wait for age races pretending to be. Like, there's some pretty good horses she's racing against.
It's a shame. It's different to the argument about whether she should have got into the Ark. I still think that the rules over there were too rigid to not allow an 11-time Group 1 winner into the arc. But, look, she would have finished way down the track in the arc. Do they go to England? A lot of it's about perception now, too, is, you know, it was interesting hearing Dean on the Brekkie show, you know, allude to Chris Waller didn't want to go, and I think that was a reasonable measure of whether they should have embarked on the journey in the first place. But, yeah, what do? I mean, you might be right about the sit sprint races, but every single race she won in Australia, bar one or two, was a sit sprint. So
the ARC weekend was almost overshadowed by the incident with Christophe Soumillon, who ended up running second on Vedat. Could you imagine if he'd won the ARC after that incident where he elbowed Ross O'Ryan out of the saddle? Let's have a listen to how the commentators covered it at the time and then Christophe Soumillon's apology.
Oh, wow. Soumillon put an elbow out there, didn't he?
It doesn't look good at all. It was a jink or...
What's Soumillon? Oh, dear me.
Right, this is...
I haven't seen that before. I don't think I've seen that before in a race.
Put my elbow against him and just to make him understand I wasn't going to the inside. And unfortunately, when I asked my horse to stay there and go a little bit to the right, I have pushed him for one stride or two. And he fall off. And straight away, I knew I made a mistake. I'm terribly sad with what happened because I hate seeing stuff like this. And when you are doing that, it's even more terrible. So I really want to apologize to everyone, not just only one, the person that owns the horse or training the horse or even the jockey. I just saw him now and he's fine. So I'm happy for that and the horse too. But yeah, for all the people loving racing and it was not a nice act from my side and I'm terribly sorry. And I want to apologize for what I did today.
So Christophe Soumillon got 2 months and there's a lot of uproar that 2 months wasn't enough. Apparently France Gallop didn't even want him to ride in the ARC, but there was nothing they could do under the rules of racing. There's some reports now that he may lose the number one seat as the Aga Khan rider, the jockey there. And it happened just 24 hours after another strange incident, shocking incident in the Ecuadorian Derby, Sharky, where a jockey, even worse, literally pushed with his hand another jockey off the horse and it fell, the jockey fell, and that jockey apparently is being barred for life. What do you think of 2 months for Soumillon?
I think it's light. I mean, that sort of action in a sport where falls, accidental falls, can have such incredibly high risk associated with them. To have somebody throw an elbow out and shove a competitor when they're least expecting it and throw them off. To throw him off balance.
It's almost like throwing someone out of a moving car.
Yeah, exactly, out of a moving car.
There was another one too. So the Ecuadorian one, that one, and then someone posted on Twitter this morning, another one from another part of the world where a jockey leaned in so heavily on another jockey and nearly tipped him out, and then the jockey said, oh, but my saddle slipped. And I think he got away with it. So it was a good apology from Christophe, but it was still
Do nothing else.
It was still a very light penalty, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Just remarkable to see that all occurring on one weekend. Boys, we are out of time. We could have kept on going. We may actually do that now that we're 3 hours in future weeks for the spring. We have got David Gately coming up a little later. We're going to do fast form in a moment. Then we'll have the full form preview at 11 o'clock. Boys, looking forward to Caulfield Guineas this weekend. There's a lot of SMSs. I'll get to them later. But Matty, we'll read all about it today.
Yep, absolutely.
And Sharknado, we'll see you later in the week.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Time for the 10 o'clock news. Fast form on the other side of that. And then we'll introduce you to a new program that's going to occur here, the Big V.